Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record Program number 259. This is being recorded on November 19th of the year 2000. It's titled Beating the Bush in Florida. This is obviously a reference to, among other things, the apparent voting irregularities in the state of Florida. In Side A of For the Record 259, we took a look at Operation Condor and what freelance Danish journalist Henrik Kruger termed the International Fascista or Fascist International. That is, as the title indicates, an international fascist milieu, which overlapped to a considerable extent some of the activities that George Bush oversaw, that's the elder George Bush, when he was director of Central Intelligence. And in particular, he was director of the CIA when Orlando Letelier was blown up in Washington, D.C. And it would appear that the Bush faction of U.S. intelligence was to a considerable extent complicit with the crimes of Operation Condor, even while other elements of U.S. intelligence opposed those very same activities. In For the Record program number 249, entitled Bushwhacked, More About the Political Heritage of George W. Bush, we took a look at, a section of RFA 37 from October 11th, 1992, that dealt with Jeb Bush and his role as the liaison between his father and the anti-Castro Cuban and pro-Contra community in Florida. What we're going to do now is to revisit that segment of RFA 37, specifically the October 11th, 1992 installment of RFA 37, and we're going to recapitulate not only what we listened to in For the Record 249, but also we're going to listen to an additional excerpt of the October 11th, 1992 installment of RFA 37. And in addition to Jeb's role as a liaison between his father and elements of the anti-Castro Cuban and Contra communities, note also Jeb Bush's efforts on behalf of Orlando Bosch and CORU. CORU, arguably the most militant of the anti-Castro Cuban organizations, is the organization that sponsored the bombing of the Cuban airliner in 1976 that alleged Contra-operative Luis Posada Carriles was accused of. Just this past week, Fidel Castro of Cuba has alleged, rightly or wrongly, that Posada Carriles was involved in a plot to kill him in Panama. Posada Carriles was detained by Panamanian authorities in connection with that particular plot. So as you listen to what you're about to listen to, bear in mind the political milieu of which the Bush family is a part, and we're going to extrapolate from the past to the present, and after taking a look at some of the past activities of Jeb Bush, we're going to take a look at some of the current activities of the Bush clan in Florida, including Jeb and also his cousin, John Ellis. This is, once again, from RFA 37, the October 11th, 1992 installment of that program.
As I noted, many of the anti-Castro exiles, veterans of the CIA's various operations, people like Orlando Bosch of the CORU organization being one such individual, many of those people figure directly in the Iran-Contra scandal. Not Orlando Bosch personally, but one of his lieutenants in the bombing of the Air Cubana plane in 1976, again while Bush was director of the CIA, was a fellow named Luis Posada Carriles. And Posada Carriles was helping to run the Contra support effort out of Ilopango Air Base in El Salvador. Another member of the CORU organization, Frank Castro, was involved with people like Dagoberto Moises Nunez and Paco Chanes in the Frigorifico de Punta Arenas, a seafood company ostensibly, which appears to have been one of the front organizations involved in the Contra-related cocaine traffic. Again, in Florida, bear in mind Henrik Kruger's projections in 1980 concerning the Miami conspiracy, and take note of what evolved during the 1980s in Miami and elsewhere in connection with the Contra support effort. Note also the role of Argentine forces in the Internacional Fascista. It was Argentine veterans of the so-called Dirty War in Argentina who helped to train the Contras in the early 1980s. What we're going to look at next is the role of Jeb Bush, George Bush's son, as a liaison person, basically, to the anti-Castro Cuban exile and some of these same forces as they function in connection with the Iran-Contra scandal, specifically the Contra support effort. For this information, we're going to turn to Covert Action Information Bulletins issue number 41 from the summer of 1992. Specifically, we're going to take a look at an article called The Family That Prays Together, and that's spelled P-R-E-Y. This is authored by Jack Colhoun, C-O-L-H-O-U-N, who is described. Jack Colhoun is the Washington correspondent for the New York Guardian Newsweekly. He has a Ph.D. in U.S. history, specializing in post-World War II foreign and military policy. And of Jeb Bush's role as George Bush's liaison to the what he calls here, that is to say Colhoun, calls the anti-Castro right, Colhoun writes as follows. George Herbert Walker Bush's second eldest son, John Ellis, or Jeb, was also linked to clandestine schemes in support of the Contras. Soon after congressional prohibition in late 1984, Jeb helped put a right-wing Guatemalan politician, Dr. Mario Castejon, C-A-S-T-E-J-O-N, in touch with Oliver North. Jeb acted as the Reagan administration's unofficial link with the Contras and Nicaraguan exiles in Miami. Jeb was contacted in February of 1985 by a friend of Castellón, who gave him a letter from Castellón to be passed on to then-Vice President Bush. In his letter, Castellón, a pediatrician and later an unsuccessful National Conservative Party presidential candidate, requested a meeting with George Bush to discuss a proposed medical aid project for the Contras. Jeb forwarded the letter to his father. In a March 3, 1985 letter, Vice President Bush expressed interest in Castellón's proposal to create an international medical brigade. Quote, I might suggest, if you are willing, that you consider meeting with Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North of the President's National Security Council staff at a time that would be convenient for you, unquote, Bush wrote. Again quoting, My staff has been in contact with Lieutenant Colonel North concerning your projects, and I know that he would be most happy to see you. You may feel free to make arrangements to see Lieutenant Colonel North if you wish, by corresponding directly with him at the White House, or by contacting Philip Hughes of my staff. Interrupting, do you think George Bush was, quote, out of the loop, unquote, as he maintains? This last couple of sentences again. I might suggest, if you are willing, that you consider meeting with Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North of the President's National Security Council staff at a time that would be convenient for you, unquote, Bush wrote. Again, quoting, My staff has been in contact with Lieutenant Colonel North concerning your projects, and I know that he would be most happy to see you. You may feel free to make arrangements to see Lieutenant Colonel North if you wish, by corresponding directly with him at the White House or by contacting Philip Hughes of my staff, unquote. Castellón later met with North in the White House, where he also saw President Ronald Reagan. When Castellón returned to Washington for a second visit, he was introduced to members of North's secret Contra support network, including retired Major General John Singlaub and Contra leader Adolfo Calero, Castellón also met with a group of doctors working with Rob Owen, North's liaison to the Contras. Quote, he, Castellón, by the way, it's C-A-S-T-E-J-O-N, was offering us a pipeline into Guatemala, unquote, said Henry Whaley, W-H-A-L-E-Y, a former arms dealer, who said he was asked by his intelligence community connections to help Castellón. Whaley was optimistic about opening a new shipping route to the Contras through Guatemala. Quote, if you can move Band-Aids, unquote, he reportedly said, you can move bullets, unquote. With Castellón, Whaley prepared a proposal to the State Department for the purchase of medical supplies for the Contras from the department's newly established Nicaraguan Humanitarian Assistance Office. The document included requests for mobile field hospitals and light aircraft to evacuate wounded Contra guerrillas. Congress approved $27 million in humanitarian aid to the Contras in 1985. The Castellón proposal was hand-delivered to TGS International Limited in the Virginia suburbs of Washington. Whaley said he sent the report to TGS so it would be, quote, quietly, unquote, forwarded to the CIA. TGS International is owned by Ted Shackley, who was CIA Associate Deputy Director of Operations when Bush Sr. headed the agency in 1976 and 7. Recall, of course, he was also the head of the JM Wave operation, and along with Thomas Kleins, one of the people involved with the Triple Wilson operations around the world. Continuing. And by the way, of course, he was also involved with the Iran-Contra scandal. Jeb had another Contra connection in his involvement with Miguel Riqueri Jr., a right-wing Cuban who headed the International Medical Centers, or IMC, in Miami in 1985 and 1986. Riqueri and his associates gave more than $25,000 in contributions to political action committees controlled by then-Vice President Bush. In 1986, Riqueri hired Jeb, a real estate developer, to find a new headquarters for IMC. Jeb was paid a $75,000 fee, even though he never located a new building. In September of 1984, 2 months after IMC's $2,000 contribution to the Dade County Republican Party, which was headed by Jeb, the vice president's son contacted several top HHS, Department of Health and Human Services, officials on behalf of IMC. Quote, "Contrary to rumors, Riqueri was a good community citizen and a good supporter of the Republican Party," unquote, one official of the HHC remembered Jeb telling him in late 1984. Jeb successfully sought an HHS waiver of a rule so that IMC could receive more than 50% of its income from Medicare. Leon Weinstein, W-E-I-N-S-T-E-I-N, an HHS Medicare fraud inspector, worked on an audit of IMC in 1986. He is charged that IMC used Medicare funds to treat wounded Contras at its hospital. The transaction was arranged by IMC official Jose Basulto, B-A-S-U-L-T-O, a right-wing Cuban trained by the CIA, who arranged for Contras to receive treatment in Miami. Basulto was praised for his commitment by Felix Rodriguez. Quote, "He has been active for a decade in supporting the Nicaraguan freedom fighters ever since the Sandinistas took power, and is constantly organizing Contra support among Miami's Cuban community. He has even been to Contra camps in Central America, helping to dispense humanitarian aid," unquote. And skipping down, Riqueri's links to the mafia also raised eyebrows in Washington. Quote, "As far back as the 1960s, he had ties with reputed racketeers who had operated out of pre-Castro Cuba and who later forged an anti-Castro alliance with the CIA," unquote, the Wall Street Journal reported. The journal added that the late Santos Traficante Jr., the mafia boss of Florida, quote, "helped out when Riqueri needed business financing," unquote. Traficante, a major drug trafficker, joined a failed CIA effort to assassinate Cuban President Fidel Castro in the early 1960s. So again, behold the evolution of this milieu. We began with the material from Henrik Krueger by taking a look at Krueger's correct, in my opinion, fingering of the importing of the Galen organization and its Vlasov contingent as the main element in the origins of this particular milieu, this fascist international that we're looking at. We saw its evolution up through the Bay of Pigs, the various anti-Castro Cuban operations, the assassination of John Kennedy, and its evolution and the evolution of many of its players on up into the fascist international that we've been looking at, an organization whose waters lap on many shores, including obviously that of elements of U.S. intelligence, elements of the residua of the Nazi Party in exile in Spain, the SS underground in Latin America, including Colonia Dignidad, and obviously among the shores that these waters wash upon are the shores of George Bush and company, unquote. Still more about Jeb and his functioning as liaison to the anti-Castro Cuban community. By the way, of course, we looked into Santos Traficante in Radio Free America number 24. We also took a look at his activities in The Guns of November Part 1 and his discussion with an anti-Castro, with a Cuban exile named Jose Alemán. Alemán expressed the viewpoint, his opinion, that President Kennedy would be reelected, and Santos Traficante said, "No, Jose, he is going to be hit." Traficante declined to testify before a congressional, or declined to give substantive testimony before a congressional committee. Now, one of the functions that Jeb Bush performed as a liaison between his father and the anti-Castro Cuban community in Miami was his lobbying on behalf of the release of Orlando Bosch. Now, remember, Orlando Bosch was the head of the Carew organization, elements of which evolved into the Internacional Fascista, elements of which, or graduates of which, such as Frank Castro, were involved with the Contra support effort. One of Orlando Bosch's one of his compatriots, one of the people involved in the bombing of the Air Cubana plane in 1976, again when George Bush was head of the CIA. One of his compatriots was a fellow named Luis Posada Carriles, again a major functionary in the Contra support effort being run out of Ilopango Air Base in El Salvador. Of Jeb Bush's efforts on behalf of Orlando Bosch, Calhoun writes as follows. Anti-Castro terrorist Orlando Bosch was paroled in 1990 after Jeb lobbied the Bush administration for his release from prison in Miami. Bosch had been jailed in 1988 for jumping bail on a 1968 conviction for shooting a bazooka at a Polish freighter in the Miami harbor. He is better known as the mastermind of the explosion of a Cuban commercial airliner over Barbados on October 5, 1976, in which 73 passengers were killed. A U.S. District Court judge revealed in 1988 that secret U.S. documents concluded Bosch was a leader of the Coordination of United Revolutionary Organizations, or CORU, which was responsible for more than 50 anti-Castro bombings in Cuba and elsewhere in the Western Hemisphere. And again, I think Calhoun has appropriately entitled his article, The Family That Prays Together, P-R-E-Y.
That again excerpted from the October 11th, 1992 installment of RFA 37, How the United States Lost the Second World War. So again, when one sees the name of Luis Posada Carriles, and when one sees mention of Operation Condor and the assassination of Orlando Letelier, one should bear in mind the Internacional Fascista, CORU, Orlando Bosch, because this milieu, the milieu that we're looking at in connection with these terror incidents, is the milieu of the Internacional Fascista and the milieu of the Bush family, a family that Maureen Dowd, the syndicated columnist of the New York Times, termed the Wasp Corleones. And again, as we're speaking on November 19th of the year 2000, it should not come as a great surprise to see apparent irregularities with regard to the vote in Florida. Looking or reading now from the New York Times of Monday, November 13th of the year 2000, some of the best commentary on the campaign of 2000 has been written by Bob Herbert, the columnist of the New York Times. And on 11/13/2000, Bob Herbert wrote a column about the electoral questions in Florida. It's entitled Fairness for Whom? And it reads in part as follows, skipping down. There's been a fair amount of publicity about the butterfly ballot in West Palm Beach. I would note that the journalistic coverage of the campaign irregularities has tended to focus on that and the fact that a lot of the voters in West Palm Beach or in Palm Beach County are of Jewish extraction and has ignored the fact that there were apparently very serious voter irregularities with regard to the African-American community in Florida. And I would also note that there has been, in certain right-wing circles, there's been a fair amount of discussion of the international Jewish conspiracy, et cetera, in light of the fact that Lieberman is the first Jew ever to run for president or vice president, and he's Gore's vice president. So don't lose sight of the fact that African-American voters were apparently messed with in Florida as well. Reading now from Bob Herbert's column, the butterfly ballot mess in Palm Beach County has been widely reported, but there are also complaints that thousands of other properly registered Floridians, many of them black, were improperly prevented from voting. This has not gotten a lot of attention. If you have large numbers of voters complaining that they were denied access to the polls, and you combine that with the fact that the Bush campaign is doing all it can to prevent a complete count of those who did vote, it's very difficult to imagine a way in which a full and fair result can be arrived at in a couple of weeks. And we're going to review a few aspects of the vote situation in Florida, some of which are better known than others. This from the front page of the New York Times of Tuesday, November 14th of the year 2000, article by Michael Moss and Ford Fessenden, F-E-S-S-E-N-D-E-N, Dateline Sanford, Florida, November 13th, headlined GOP Played Role in Absentee Vote. Subtitled, A Different Twist in the Ballot Affects Another Florida County, and this reads in part as follows. In the weeks before the presidential election, Florida Republicans mailed party voters tens of thousands of requests for absentee ballots that were virtually completed, requiring only the applicant's signature and Social Security number. The aim was to drive up absentee voting for Governor George W. Bush of Texas, but problems emerged. Many of the forms provided by the Republicans lacked the voter registration number required by Florida's tough anti-fraud election laws. Election officials in several countries said in interviews today that they supplied the missing number on the forms and sent out absentee ballots to voters. In Seminole County, just north of Orlando, Sandra Gord, the local election supervisor, refused to accept the applications without the registration number. But Ms. Gord allowed Republican workers to camp out in her offices for as long as 10 days to make handwritten corrections on the pre-printed applications sent out by the Republican Party. The state enacted new laws that were especially stringent on the issuing of absentee ballots after widespread fraud in the 1997 mayoral election in Miami led to the removal of Mayor Xavier Suarez. The laws say ballots may not be issued unless prospective voters provide identifying information, including their voter identification number. But these requirements were disregarded this year in thousands of cases around the state of Florida. And one possible reason why concerns the person in charge of the Florida electoral process. This has received a fair amount of publicity, but on the other side of the front page of the New York Times for 11/14/2000, we have the following article by Michael Cooper, Dateline Tallahassee, Florida, November 13th, headlined, Florida official has dual roles in a maelstrom. It reads in part, the Democrats fighting over the Florida presidential vote focused part of their attack today on Catherine Harris, the elected official who was making some of the pivotal judgments in the post-election struggle, and is a Republican Party stalwart who serves in Governor Jeb Bush's cabinet. Ms. Harris was a co-chairwoman of Governor George W. Bush's presidential campaign in Florida. Wearing a couple of hats was Ms. Harris. And although Jeb Bush has formally recused himself from the recount or continuing electoral process, some of his subordinates have not. This from the San Jose Mercury News of Friday, November 17th of the year 2000. Article by Lisa Getter of the L.A. Times. It's Dateline Tallahassee, Florida. Headlined, Jeb Bush's top aides take time off to help the governor's brother. It reads in part, even though Florida Governor Jeb Bush has recused himself from any role in the recount of ballots that could put his brother in the White House, six of his top gubernatorial aides have taken time off in the past 10 days to help the Republican effort. None of the senior advisors, who include his deputy general counsel, four other members of his legal staff, and his press secretary, has been paid by the state while helping the George W. Bush campaign in its post-election battle. But their very presence in the recount fight appears to undercut Jeb Bush's contention that he disqualified himself from the process to avoid even the, quote, slightest, unquote, public conflict of interest. And another aspect of the funky electoral results coming in from Florida, those which will decide the 2000 presidential campaign. This from the L.A. Times of Wednesday, November 15th of the year 2000. This is an op-ed column by Tom Rosensteel, vice chairman of the Committee of Concerned Journalists, last name R-O-S-E-N-S-T-I-E-L, headlined, one more election embarrassment for the press, Bush cousin. This is this article reads in part, add to the press's defeat in election 2000 the latest embarrassment. The election night call declaring George W. Bush winner did not come from the news media polling group Voter News Service. It came first from the political desk of the Fox News Channel, which was being run by Bush's first cousin, John Ellis. The other networks quickly followed, pressured by Fox's decision. The collective error helped create the suggestion of a race won by Bush and then recalled. That is fostering the idea among Bush supporters that the election could be, quote, stolen, unquote, from Bush on a technicality. And it is fostering the idea among Al Gore supporters that the vice president was finessed into conceding to Bush before the vote count actually indicated the Texas governor had won the race. Not only was George and Jeb Bush's cousin John Ellis in charge of the political desk of Fox News, he also was in regular contact with both of the Bushes, that is to say, George W. and Jeb. This from the New York Times of Tuesday, November 14th of the year 2000. This is an article by Bill Carter. Its headline, news executive called races and Bush, and it reads in part as follows. Senior executives for the Fox News Channel acknowledged last night that John Ellis, an executive who played a central role in the first decision on election night to project that George W. Bush had won the presidency, and who was a first cousin of Mr. Bush, spent much of the night in communication with the candidate. The Fox executives said they had been unaware of the contact, and said Mr. Ellis had misused his role with the network, perhaps damaging its reputation. Mr. Ellis, the head of the election desk for the Fox News Network, acknowledged in an article published this week in the New Yorker magazine that he held repeated phone conversations with Mr. Bush and his brother Jeb, the governor of Florida, throughout election night, giving them indications of the way the vote was going. Skipping down, he acknowledged that during the night he did, quote, speak frequently with Governor George Bush and Governor Jeb Bush, unquote. They are his first cousins. Mr. Ellis is the son of Nancy Ellis, a sister of former President George Bush. By the way, Jeb Bush's full name is John Ellis Bush, hence the nickname Jeb. And by the way, don't fail to note that James Baker, George Bush's former Secretary of State, is walking point for the Bush campaign in Florida. And remember that the vice presidential candidate for the Republicans is Dick Cheney, who was Bush's Secretary of Defense. Basically, if George W. wins, this will simply be another term for his father in all likelihood. That's pretty much what people are assuming. So again, when one sees the shenanigans currently unfolding in Florida, it really should not come as a great deal of a surprise. Again, just look at the family history. This concludes Side B of For the Record Program 259, Beating the Bush in Florida. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.